Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Part 3, Chapter 3. How the Joyful and Sad Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the joyful and the sad. That is, before the joyful are to be set the sad things that follow upon punishment, but before the sad, the promised glad things of the kingdom. Let the joyful learn by the asperity of threats what to be afraid of. Let the sad bear what joys of reward they may look forward to. For to the former it is said, "Woe unto you that laugh now, for you shall weep." But the latter hear from the teaching of the same master, "I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no man shall take from you." But some are not made joyful or sad by circumstances, but are so by temperament. And to such it should be intimated that certain defects are connected with certain temperaments, that the joyful have lechery close at hand, and the sad, wrath. Hence it is necessary for everyone to consider not only what he suffers from his peculiar temperament, but also what worse thing presses on him in connection with it, lest while he fights not at all against that which he has, he succumb also to that from which he supposes himself free. Chapter 4. How Subjects and Prelates Are to Be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are subjects and prelates. The former, that subjection crush them not. The latter, that a superior place elate them not. The former, that they fail not to fulfill what is commanded of them. The latter, that they command not more to be fulfilled than is just. The former, that they submit humbly. The latter, that they preside temperately. For this, which may be understood also figuratively, is said to the former, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." But to the latter it is enjoined, "And you, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath." Let the former learn how to order their inward thoughts before the eyes of the hidden judge. The latter, how also to those that are committed to them to afford outward examples of good living. For prelates ought to know that if they ever perpetrate what is wrong, they are worthy of as many deaths as they transmit examples of perdition to their subjects. Wherefore it is necessary that they guard themselves so much the more cautiously from sin, as by the bad things they do, they die not alone, but are guilty of the souls of others, which by their bad example they have destroyed. Wherefore, the subjects are to be admonished, lest they should be strictly published, if merely on their own account, they should be unable to stand acquitted. The prelates, lest they should be judged for the errors of their subjects, even though on their own account they find themselves secure. Subjects are to be admonished that they live with all the more anxiety about themselves, as they are not entangled by care for others. But prelates, that they accomplish their charge of others in such a way as not to desist from charge of themselves, and so to be ardent in anxiety about themselves as not to grow sluggish in the custody of those committed to them. To the subject who is at leisure for his own concerns, it is said, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, and consider her ways, and learn wisdom." But the prelate is terribly admonished when it is said, "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, and art snared with the words of thy mouth, and art taken with thine own speeches." For to be surety for a friend is to take charge of the soul of another on the surety of one's own behavior. Whence also the hand is stricken with a stranger? Because the mind is bound with the care of a responsibility which before was not. But he is snared with the words of his mouth and taken with his own speeches. because while he is compelled to speak good things to those who are committed to him, he must needs himself, in the first place, observe the things that he speaks. He is therefore snared with the words of his mouth, being constrained by the requirement of reason not to let his life be relaxed to what agrees not with his teaching. Hence, before the strict judge, he is compelled to accomplish as much in deed as it is plain he has enjoined on others with his voice. Thus, in the passage above cited, this exhortation is also presently added. Do therefore what I say, my son, and deliver thyself, seeing thou hast fallen into the hands of thy neighbor. Run up and down, hasten, arouse thy friend, give not sleep to thine eyes, nor let thine eyelids slumber. For whosoever is put over others for an example of life is admonished not only to keep watch himself, but also to wake his friend. For it is not enough for him to keep watch in living well, if he do not also sever him whom he is set over, from the torpor of sin. For it is well said, Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor let thine eyelids slumber. For indeed, to give sleep to the eyes is to cease from earnestness, so as to neglect altogether the care of our subordinates. But the eyelids slumber, when our thoughts, weighed down by sloth, connive at what they know ought to be reproved in subordinates. For to be fast asleep is neither to know nor to correct the deeds of those committed to us. But to know what things are to be blamed, and still, through laziness of mind, not amend them by fitting rebukes, is not to sleep, but to slumber. Yet the eye, through slumbering, passes into the deepest sleep, since, for the most part, when one who is over others does not cut off the evil that he knows, he comes sooner or later, as his negligence deserves, not even to know what is done wrong by his subjects. Wherefore, those who are over others are to be admonished, that through earnestness of circumspection they have eyes watchful within and round about, and strive to become living creatures of heaven. For the living creatures of heaven are described as full of eyes round about and within. And so it is fitting that those who are over others should have eyes within and round about, so as both in themselves to study to please the inward judge, and also, affording outwardly examples of life, to detect the things that should be corrected in others. Subjects are to be admonished that they judge not rashly the lives of their superiors, if perchance they see them act blamably in anything, lest, from where they rightly find fault with evil, they there thence be sunk by the impulse of elation to lower depths. They are to be admonished that when they consider the faults of their superiors, they grow not too bold against them, but if any of their deeds are exceedingly bad, so judge of them within themselves that, constrained by the fear of God, they still do not refuse to bear the yoke of reverence under them. Which thing we shall show the better, if we bring forward what David did. For when Saul, the persecutor, had entered into a cave to ease himself, David, who had so long suffered under his persecution, was within it with his men. And when his men incited him to smite Saul, he cut them short with the reply that he ought not to put forth his hand against the Lord's anointed. And yet, he rose unperceived and cut off the border of his robe. For what is signified by Saul but bad rulers, and what by David but good subjects? Saul's easing himself, then, means rulers extending the wickedness conceived in their hearts to works of woeful stench, and their showing the noisome thoughts within them by carrying them out into deeds. Yet David was afraid to strike him, because the pious minds of subjects, withholding themselves from the whole plague of backbiting, smite the life of their superiors with no sword of the tongue, even when they blame them for imperfection. and when through infirmity they can scarce refrain from speaking, however humbly, of some extreme and obvious evil of their superiors. They cut, as it were, silently, the border of their robe, because, to wit, when even though harmlessly and secretly they derogate from the dignity of superiors, they disfigure, as it were, the garment of the king who is set over them. Yet still they return to themselves, and blame themselves most vehemently for even the slightest defamation of speech. Hence it is also well written in that place, afterward David's heart smote him, because he had cut off the border of Saul's robe. For indeed, the deeds of superior are not to be smitten with the sword of the mouth, even when they are rightly judged to be worthy of blame. But if ever, even in the least, the tongue slips into censure of them, the heart must needs be depressed by the affliction of penitence, to the end that it may return to itself, and when it has offended against the power set over it, may dread the judgment against itself of him by whom it was set over it. For when we offend against those who are set over us, we go against the ordinance of him who set them over us. Whence also Moses, when he had become aware that the people complained against himself and Aaron, he said, "For what are we? Not against us are your murmurings, but against the Lord." End of chapter 4.